Welcome back to Shift with Beth. I'm your host, Beth Shield, and today's guest is someone I am so excited to have on. Kendra Allen, you might know her as the Breakup Bestie on Instagram. And if you don't, you're about to want to follow her immediately. Kendra is a breakup coach. She's the host of Heal Your Heartbreak podcast and the author of the Breakup Workbook. She's built an entire community around helping women move through heartbreak with honesty and grace. And most importantly, the real growth that comes on the other side. Now, here's what makes this conversation extra special for me. Kendra actually had me on her podcast a couple of years ago, and I talked about breath work and the nervous system and how it helps you regulate. And I just remember thinking, this woman gets it. We just had this connection. She's not just talking about getting over someone. She's talking about getting back to yourself. So when I reached out to her to do this collab, I was so glad that she was in. Because what I see in my own work over and over again, so much of the pain that comes up in a breakup isn't just about the person you lost. It's really about how much of yourself that you gave away while you were in that relationship. The ways you may have shrunk, the ways you stopped trusting your gut, the ways you abandoned your own needs to keep the peace, keep the connection, keep them from leaving, and that self-abandonment. And a breakup has a way of cracking it wide open. So today, Kendra and I are going to dig into her story, which I am so excited to hear, what she's learned from helping so many people through heartbreak, and what it actually looks like to come back to yourself on the other side of one of the hardest experiences truly life can throw at you. I think you're going to love her. So let's get into it. Welcome, Kendra, to the podcast. I am so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me on. It's been, I mentioned this to you when we were emailing, but your episode on my podcast, I think, was the most listened to one of the year. So you're...
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yes. It was like a very, very, it really hit with people. So I'm so happy to be here and, you know, have you back again too. So I enjoy talking with you a lot.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. So I was on Kendra's podcast. I think it's been a little over 2 years ago, and talked about nervous system and breath work and stuff like that. And so I reached out to you to collab, and you were like, yes. And I was so excited because I love the work that you're doing, and you have helped so many people. So what I would love is just to hear more. I didn't get to hear your story. I haven't gotten to hear your story. I mean, I know a little bit because I'm a podcast listener, but if you could just share your story, anything you want to share about you, how you got started.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see where to start. So I think the two, like one of the biggest pieces of background for me that I think is very relevant to my entire journey is I got sober when I was 21. So I struggled with drugs and alcohol from 16 to 21. So it was quick, it was destructive, and I'm really happy that I found sobriety and have been able to stick with it. So it's been almost 13 and a half years since getting sober. So that's a really big, I'd say that's like the basis for so much of what I do. So that's
can
like,
you, would you be open to sharing like what?
Yes.
How did you get start? Was it drinking?
I started drinking at 15. I'd say it was very much like just, you know, high school curiosity. I mean, I didn't, it's interesting. My parents don't drink at all. And so it's not like I grew up in an alcoholic home and so I started just, you know, as a curious teenager. And I will say right when I started drinking, I do remember feeling this moment of like relief almost of, it just felt like it cured everything that I was struggling with as, you know, an anxious teenager. So I do feel like I had, and I probably didn't realize it at the time, more so later on, but I remember, you know, the first time it was not pretty. I like drunk dialed an ex-boyfriend and made a fool of myself, and the next day still was like, okay, when can I do this again? It was so fun. So I, you know, it progressed from there. And I think the big turning point for me was when I was probably 16 and a half. I was sexually assaulted at like a house party and didn't.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm lucky that I've been able to do so much trauma healing and stuff on that. I mean, it took a really long time for me to even admit what it was and for me to share it with people. But that was, I would say, the line that was crossed over for me of drinking just for fun to not realizing it, but drinking as a numbing mechanism for sure. And that obviously made things so much worse. And so it became, you know, problematic. And I will say alcohol was probably my main thing. I dabbled in drugs and things like that, but that never really became, I mean, I'm so thankful that's not now, just hearing about what, you know, things look like now with fentanyl and all those things. I'm really glad that I wasn't at risk for that kind of stuff. But, you know, I tried stopping or cutting back because I knew my actions weren't great and I knew that it was problematic, but I kind of always wrote it off to circumstances of like, oh, it's just with the wrong people, or I didn't eat enough, or I just should stay away from like hard alcohol, I should just drink beer. You know, I tried all these different things. And then when I was 18, I got into a relationship with someone 12 years older than me. So he was 30 and I was 18. So, wow. So crazy to think about. And what was interesting is because that relationship was very controlling, my drinking actually was kind of better. And now it's like I look at what my parents probably thought at the time, which is so wild to, you know, have your 18-year-old tell, you know, you that she's dating a 30-year-old. And
yeah, what was their response to that?
I wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't, but, you know, I think they probably knew deep down that they didn't want to stop it because they didn't want to lose touch with me. They didn't want to like harm our relationship, which I'm thankful for. And I think it did keep my drinking down because there was that controlling aspect. So I think I kind of just switched addictions for a couple years when I was in that relationship of just addicted to him and the ups, the highs and lows of being in a relationship like that. So I was in that relationship until right before I turned 21 and got out of that relationship and did one more solid year of drinking and not great things. And
was it hard for you to get out of that relationship?
Yes. Yeah, it was hard. I mean, I will say like it took me a year and a half from our initial breakup to actually no longer speaking with him. Mm-hmm. And there was so much involved. There was a lot of, which is so interesting looking at the age gap, but there was a lot of financial abuse on his end. You know, my parents, the money that my parents would give me was going to him. He had, you know, a background that he had an excuse for everything. You know, my credit's messed up because I used to work in mortgages and then there was the 2008 crash. So there were just all these excuses, but there was a lot of finances tied up in our relationship. And so that took a long time to separate. And also, you know, I also lost so many relationships when I was with him that it felt like I had to start from scratch almost with friends and all of that. So I was also just lonely. So being able to go to him for comfort and all of that was, so it was, yeah. So it took, I think, 6 months for us to move out. this is going to sound like I'm making it up. It's such a crazy story. But like a week after we initially broke up, he went out with some friends. And as he was crossing the street, he got hit by a car that was going like 50 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
So that, you know, like I was already so enmeshed with him that I was going to stay and take care of him while he was healing from all of that. So that made it so much worse too. So there was so many obstacles to.
So at the time he got hit, were you guys, you were planning on moving out or you were struggling in your relationship, but then that happened. And so you were like, well, I have to take care of him.
Yes, we had broken up. We had broken up probably a week before, but we're still living together and we're waiting to kind of sort the logistics of it out. And yes, and so it happened during that time. So we basically acted like we were together for another 6 months after that. And then it took, you know, it took me going on a trip with my parents without him that allowed the distance for me to be like, wow, this is not working.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
Yes. Yeah, it was a lot. And two, that took time to also realize that that was another form of PTSD to work through, being in that kind of a relationship for, you know, very formative years for me to think like that was my first real relationship, and having to unlearn so many of those things was, you know, took a long time. And that still pops up. Like there, I think a couple months ago, my husband and I got into an argument and something that he did, I was like, wow, this is really bringing something up for me. And luckily I'm in a relationship now where he's very well aware of, you know, the things that have happened. And so I can be honest with those, but it is so crazy how those things can stick with you for such a long time.
Absolutely. Triggers that, you know, come up. And when you're in a safe relationship, that's when they can come up. But I mean, I'm sure you've been married for a long time, right?
Yes, it's been, August will be 8 years.
So 8 years, you're in this relationship, you're in your marriage, and then still there's things within you, because that's what trauma is, that come up. So I'm so happy to hear you're with a man that sounds like he's safe, that you can work through these things with.
Yes. Yeah, that I can be honest with. And he, you know, he can separate the fact of it's not about him. It's about my past. And, you know, he can hold the space for that. So, but yes, you're right. It's like things like that can't necessarily come up until you are at a place of safety. So I try to remind people of that, even, you know, in the work that I do now, of, hey, when you're going through a breakup, like a lot of stuff won't come up until later on. And it doesn't mean you're backtracking. It means you're moving forward, even though it feels like you're backtracking.
Right. And just having that awareness that like, oh, I'm triggered. This is old. So many people don't have that.
Yeah.
And then they project onto their partner.
Yeah. Yes. So that was, you know, thanks to a lot of therapy and a lot of time, you know, I don't think time is everything, but I do think time is important when you're talking about coming out of something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you left that relationship.
Yes. And then, you know, went on this, I guess, year of kind of trying to recapture my early adolescence. It felt like I had to grow up really fast to be in that relationship. And so I was still in college. I got into my dream school. I wanted to do the sorority, the football games. And I missed all of those things being in that relationship. I never lived in the dorms. So it felt like I was trying to recapture that, but not in, like, I still had alcoholism. I still had this drinking issue. So that really sent me on a year that was hard, but I'm also really thankful for it because, you know, the fact that I was able to admit that there was a problem at 21 and get the help for it, I think of how many years it could have gone on for. And, you know, I think the average age for a woman to get sober is in like her 40s. So the fact that I have been able to save myself so much time
It's incredible.
Is great. So while it was quick and traumatic, it led me to hitting a bottom sooner, which now I'm thankful for.
Mm. Wow. So what help did you get when you hit that bottom?
I was really thankful that I found 12-step meetings. That was a huge thing. I joined like an outpatient program, which helped to just giving structure. But for me, there was this relief. Like I remember sitting in my first AA meeting and hearing people describe what alcoholism is, because I always grew up thinking it was someone that lived under a bridge drinking out of like a brown paper bag from morning to night. Mm-hmm. But just hearing the real, I guess, definition of alcoholism of like, once you start, you can't stop. And I remember always saying, I just don't have an off switch. Like I could never relate to people saying, oh, I've had too much, I don't want anymore. I never naturally had that within myself. So I think realizing that, it was such a huge relief, because to me it felt like there was a moral issue with me. It was like I was raised well with good parents. Like I always considered myself to be a kind person, but then it was, you know, I was stealing and, you know, cheating on people's, you know, like sleeping with people that were in relationships, like all these things that I just knew were wrong. And so to me, there was a relief of knowing, okay, this is the issue. It's not a moral failing on my part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you feel like a lot of shame about it for a while? Like, yeah, what's wrong with me? Why am I doing this?
Yes. I mean, I felt shame about it for a long time, I would say. You know, it took me a couple years of changing my behavior to feel like, okay, I can like face the world again. You know, and part of the 12 steps is going and making amends to people that you've harmed. And so once I was able to do that with like the key people, it made such a big difference. And also the power of, and I think this is why I'm so open on my show and other shows, is I have such specific memories of being in meetings and hearing someone say something that I felt like I could never tell anyone, like, no, I'm taking this to the grave. I'm never going to say this. And watching someone say it with such levity and, you know, hearing people laugh, not laugh at them, but just laugh at like, wow, we've all gone through that. That was so powerful for me, of knowing that I wasn't alone. And that took away so much shame of just knowing that I'm not the only person in the world going through that. And that's also been a key theme, I think, in all of my work with Breakup Bestie, is reminding people that they're not alone in anything mm-hmm. that they're experiencing in their relationship or their breakup.
Absolutely. That is so powerful. I could feel that from you. And that's, for me, why I share so much of vulnerability and pain, and because there was a time where I felt completely alone, or there's shame that I didn't want to talk about. And how can we feel like we're not alone if no one is sharing?
Yeah.
Right. And there's so much power behind that. And it takes a lot of courage to live that way. And so I'm so glad that you had that example for you. And now you're that for so many people.
Yeah. I'm so thankful for that. And it always feels, you know, I don't know, anytime that I think about not sharing something, or I have like this very specific example of when I had my first son, I joined like a new mom group, and we were all sitting at lunch after one of the classes, and everyone was going around sharing how they met their husband. And, you know, I have my story of, oh, we met through mutual friends. And this day, for whatever reason, I decided to say, oh, we met in AA. You know, we've both been sober for a decade at that point. And that prompted a girl to ask to go to dinner one night because she had a family member struggling with addiction, and that person has now been my best friend for 4 years. And I just think of, like, you know, sometimes the things that we share can be so powerful. And I'm sure there are times that I've overshared, but I don't know. It's never gone terribly wrong. But the times that I have shared, sometimes it goes so well. So.
Right. And I think like oversharing, it's never oversharing for the people that are in alignment with you that need to hear it.
Yes.
Right. Yes. But I have that too, where I'm like, why did I share all that?
I know,
like, cause it's so vulnerable, or, you know, and that's like the own like self-judgment that we have of ourselves. But I love that story about you sharing that. And then now you have this beautiful friend in your life because of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So I think another part of my story is once I got sober, I remember thinking, and even I remember my dad said it too. He's like, okay, now that you're sober, you're basically, in so many words, he said, like, your relationships will improve, like with men. And I remember thinking that too, like, okay, now that I'm sober, I won't have these issues with men. And the spoiler alert of it was that did not fix everything. You know, it led to, I don't know. It's like nothing changed. Nothing changes if nothing changes. So I found myself in these like short, very intense relationships where either they were way too available, which did not sit well with me, or they were unavailable, which made me so invested. You know, it's so funny.
Chasing.
That, yes, chasing. And it wasn't until I had, I think, 2.5 years sober where I went through a breakup, and it was almost like all of my relationships up to that point all hit with this one breakup, because I had never really done like an inventory. You know, I'd done inventories on so many things. My relationships were never something that I truly looked at. And so that breakup was so devastating. That breakup is the basis of Breakup Bestie. And I remember being like, okay, when I said I wanted help getting sober, there was a program for me to go to. There was specific therapists, meetings. There's just so many things. Mm-hmm. And then when it came to the breakup, there wasn't really anything that could give me super structured support or step-by-step things. So I just, you know, pain is, I believe, our greatest motivator. So I really took the next 6 months and just was like, what is this going to look like to heal from this? Like, how, you know, and it obviously happened in layers, mm-hmm. but I think the next year of experience is what ended up being Breakup Bestie, you know, and that was years later after it was already done. And I had become what I say, like the Breakup Bestie to my social circle. And then I started writing, and then I started the Instagram, and, you know, it evolved from there. But yeah, I think the sobriety and, you know, finally taking a look at what is my part in these relationships that's happening, like why, finally realizing that I'm a mirror and I attract what I promote, and looking at those things were the things that I'd say got me to the place where I could start helping other people.
Wow. That's so beautiful. How old were you when you kind of started that?
Let's see. I think I was 27. Yeah, I was 27 when I started. And I started the podcast when I was right after I turned 30. Yeah, it's, I started the podcast during COVID, and it's been going for 6 years now. So,
what?
And I've That's learned incredible. So much since then too. It's like, there's always so much to learn in the realm of relationships and breakups. And even though I'm, you know, it's been 11 years since I've gone through a breakup, I feel like I still, you know, get to be a student. And I believe there's, you know, breakups translate into so many other things, whether that's job loss or financial insecurity or friendship losses, you know. So I've been able to continue to use the tools that I picked up during that time in all areas of life.
Yeah. Yeah. So you basically created what you wished you would have had.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Because you've written a guide, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I have a workbook that I wrote with a publisher, and yeah, it's very my style, where there's exercises, there's things to write, there's, I don't know, I feel like when I went through the breakup, it's like you would go on Pinterest and look at these like sappy quotes and they would make you feel good for a minute or two. And then after that, you're like, okay, well, what do I do about this? So it allowed, you know, figuring out, okay, what, like, journaling's great. What do I write? If I've never journaled in my life, how can I just start doing this? So actual prompts and, you know, how do you actually go no contact with an ex? And how do you start looking at your part so that this type of relationship doesn't happen again?
Yeah. And when you say go, how do you go no contact? So this is a big one, right? Yes. Can you speak more about that and how you help support people in doing that? Because you can't make someone do that, you know?
No.
But yes. How do you teach that? I would love to hear.
Yeah. And this is, you know, I think this is the biggest way that I have connected my sobriety with my relationship things is I always... So I will preface this by saying I did not go no contact until the most recent breakup that I had. So I had a lot of experience staying in touch with an ex, still seeing them, you know, still sleeping with them because like 1 + 1 = 2, like that's, you know, the more you see them, the more likely stuff like that's going to happen. And it wasn't until the last one that there was something in me that again was like, I need to do something different this time. And this particular relationship, we did have a lot of on and off, and it was always him saying I can't be available for a long-term relationship, and me saying, okay, well, I do want a long-term relationship, so this isn't going to work. But then it was still reaching out, still seeing each other. So this time it was like, okay, if you can't be with me, you can't have me in any way, you know? And I think that was one of the biggest things for me in choosing myself and yes. being like, I'm not going to make myself available for anything other than a relationship. And again, I think that was highly motivated by pain of I can't put myself through this anymore. Yeah. There was also like a level of shame of him ending it with me, even though it should have been the other way around. But like, I think that was definitely the universe doing for me what I couldn't do for myself at that time. So, and then, you know, to me, I kind of treated it like detoxing off of a substance, because it's the same thing. And you know what's so interesting is in the last 6 years, it's like I've learned so much from the experts on it's the same thing. It's like your brain thinks of it the same exact way as it does cocaine, alcohol. Like it hits all the same parts of the brain.
Especially if you're in a trauma bonded situation.
Yes.
It's like stopping drugs.
And it's painful. And I've talked to so many people. I mean, no contact has kind of become my thing in this space. And so I've talked to so many people and it's so hard. It's so hard. So whenever I say it, I know it works, but I also know that it's not easy. And I had many times where I felt temptation to reach out. And I've shared this story a lot on my platform, but I had this very specific instance where it was this person's birthday coming up, and I wanted to send a text so bad, so bad. And I was doing that thing, you know, where you reach out to a bunch of different people and you're hoping someone will tell you it's okay and it's a good idea.
You need permission.
You need permission from just one person, even though like 9 other people said, don't do it.
Right.
So I was doing that, and I happened to talk to one of my guy friends who also knew my ex. And I said, you know, I really want to text him for his birthday. And he said, and he asked me, like, what would be the only thing you feel like you'd be happy with him replying if you say happy birthday? And it was one of those things where it's like, you tell yourself you're just, you just want to say happy birthday, that you're thinking
I just want to be kind.
I just want to be kind. It would be so weird. We know we celebrated birthdays together before. It'd be so weird to not send the text. And then, you know, if you dig a little deeper, it's like, no, all I want him to say is, thank you so much. I miss you terribly. I've made a horrible mistake. I want to be with you for forever and ever. And
right.
And you please come celebrate my birthday with me tonight and be together for, with me forever. Like, that's really the only thing that I, that would make me feel fulfilled by saying that. Mm-hmm. And then he said, okay, most likely, what do you think he's going to say? And it's like, thank you, or nothing, yeah, or okay, or thumbs up. You know, there's just so many ways to be tremendously let down by that situation. And that was such a turning point for me of, you know, and I was talking to a mentor of mine at the time, and she said, you know, it's like very much keep the ball in your court. If you send the message, you're giving the ball to them, mm-hmm, and you're losing your power. And so connecting, contacting them with losing power, lower, you know, let down expectations, it became, wow, there's really nothing worthwhile to reach out and say that would make me want to do it, you know? And, mm-hmm, and also I'm tremendously grateful that I never, you know, he didn't contact me either after the breakup. And I, you know, whenever people say, I can't believe they haven't reached out to see how I'm doing, I get that. I've had that feeling too. But at the same time, I'm like, it's a gift that they're giving you to not mess with you and to not play with your emotions any more than, you know, the breakup has already done. So I think that for me was the power of going no contact and then seeing in real time, like, okay, waking up every day hoping that I hear from them, and then that fades, and then, mm-hmm, and then the temptation to reach out gets lower and lower, and you know, and it does, right, it helps. I mean, it helped so much. It's more painful in the beginning, I will say, but it is ripping the Band-Aid off, and it's going to make the healing easier in the long run.
Right, right. And I think it is a huge gift when the ex isn't trying to get in your energy and isn't trying to mess with your head. But I see so many times with clients who are trying to pull, like, heal from something or not, you know, they're questioning things. And then when the ex comes in and, you know, it's that hoovering, it's that, it's so hard. And so as a coach, and I'm sure you see this too, it's like, so why are we still giving him access?
Yes.
He can only do this because you're getting that dopamine hit. So it's so, it's practice to, you know, and then when I have a client that's finally like, okay, I blocked them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like,
it's huge.
It's this most empowering, beautiful thing, but it's so difficult for people to get to that place.
It's, yes, it's so hard. And being on the other side, it's obviously so much easier for me to say it than it is
right
for someone to do it. But yes, and shifting the mindset of like them continuing to reach out to you, even when you have said, I need space. I think for a long time, and probably because of having traumatic relationships in the past, it's easy to be like, oh, this is romantic. You know, they care about me so much that they're continuing to reach out, and then realizing like, this isn't romantic. This is complete and utter disrespect towards me,
right,
you know?
And manipulation of like,
yeah,
wanting to kind of hold on to you, but like, they don't really want you.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so there's that layer too. So I love that you talk so much about this because it's something that people really need support with.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the beginning's always the hardest. And so I try to, that's a big thing for me to try to help support people through that. Just, and I do think that my experience with addiction is, you know, uniquely gives me the perspective to be able to help people in that space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would love for you to speak to. So when you had this breakup, you were sober.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So tell me about, did you have the desire to drink during that time? Like, how was it feeling your feelings and how did you navigate actually feeling everything? Because I talk a lot about this too. In my own experience, like I did not buffer with anything once I finally chose myself.
Yeah.
And so I would love to hear how that was for you.
Yeah, no, it is something also like very, I'm not gonna lie, it was very hard. It was a lot of crying, and I learned to appreciate that. I had a mentor say, like, this is gonna come with a certain amount of tears, and you can either choose to let them out now, or you can choose to let them out, come out completely sideways in a year. So see it as like, this is you letting that out. So there was a lot of tears. There was a lot of writing. I wrote so much and that helped a lot. I feel grateful. I never felt tempted to drink. I dove really headfirst into 12-step programs and getting support there. But what was also interesting too is, you know, there's so many different ways to take the edge off, obviously. It's like, and I have this very specific memory of, you know, after a little bit of time had gone by, and there was a guy that I always thought was very good looking, and somehow, I don't remember how, we connected and had started talking, and it was clear that it was, you know, not like a dating situation. It was going to be like a one night stand thing. And I remember being like, this is going to make me feel better. You know, like this is another tool that I can take off the shelf and use. And so it happened. We did it. And I remember he left my apartment and I just started sobbing. And I think what I was sobbing about was, this still doesn't work. You know, like, That tool doesn't work. I think once you see that feeling the feelings is the way out, doing right. something to distract. And, you know, distraction, I think, still very much has a time and a place when you're going through something.
Right. But we're human. It's okay sometimes.
Yes. Like we all, you know I use that after a long day parenting. It's like I'd rather just zone out on my phone for a little bit to for a second. But yeah, so I think I tried to reach for some other things and realized that those didn't work for me anymore. And that really left me being like, okay, it's me, you know, and it's not just me. Obviously I had a lot of support and things, but it was good. It was almost good to have that realization of, okay, this is the way out. And
right. And you couldn't have come to that learning unless you did the one night stand, right? So it's like,
yes,
this happens so much with people and then they're so hard on themselves and like, I can't believe I did that. You know, instead of like, no, that was supposed to happen so that I could see like, nope, that's not going to make me feel better actually. But not treating yourself with like shame or, you know, judgment. Do you feel like you were kind to yourself?
I actually do feel like I was kind to myself, and because I do think I had that insight of, oh, okay, this is me just trying different things, you know, mm-hmm. and I do think that's such a big part of healing is learning to listen to yourself again and to hear your gut feelings. And, you know, I remember another time I was on a dating app and I had set up a date with someone and I felt so awful that day. And I remember someone being like, you don't have to go on the date. And it was such this thing of like, oh, I don't have to go on the date. And being able to check in with myself of like, am I not going because I'm trying to avoid something? Or am I not going because I really don't feel like I want to go? And being able to say like, oh, I just really don't want to go, and canceling it. And so then I would try other dates, and so it was a lot of learning as I go, which was so helpful. You know, I had never really done that. I'd always been such this like chameleon people pleaser, in relationships and friendships. And so that also allowed me to start breaking free from that pattern.
Isn't that so crazy how it's like your friend was like, you don't actually have to go.
Yeah.
It like doesn't even occur to you before that. It's like, and then you got that permission that you really actually didn't need. But it's things like that where in our lives, we have these patterns of like, well, though that's what I said I would do it, I'm going to do it. Like I have to, it's like learning that was a big lesson. It sounds like for you of like, oh, I can say no, I can cancel this if it doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it was. So I, you know, and that was another thing too with like dating. I don't think you need to be fully healed from a breakup in order to start dating. I don't think that even exists because I don't think you can fully heal until you're in contact with other people.
I totally agree. And I get that question a lot too. And I think you're never going to be fully healed. And there's certain aspects you can't heal till you're in a relationship. But I do feel like you need self-awareness.
Yes.
You need to know, like, be understanding of why, what happened in your last breakups? Like, what did you learn? Having that awareness. Otherwise, I do believe that if you don't do that, you'll attract the same person in a different body.
100%. Yes. Yes. Because, you know, for me, it was, okay, I keep attracting people that are emotionally unavailable or don't want a long-term relationship. And so being able to realize that, it was like, I finally felt comfortable on a date to be like, hey, what are your thoughts on marriage? Where before I would be like, oh my gosh, that's so much. And I don't think I did that right off the bat, but like being comfortable to be like, okay, I'm going to practice asking this question. And, you know, they didn't run away from the table and be like, you're crazy. You're too needy.
Right.
So I think there is, dating can be this practice lab. If
yes.
We can get to that place of like, oh, I'm going to practice setting boundaries, or I'm going to practice being honest in ways that I would normally self-abandon, and see what happens. And it usually goes well. And then you have that muscle that keeps building, and
you're not attached. So you get to a place where it's like,
yeah,
if I'm expressing what I need and want, and it's not the same as them, it's like, that's okay. And I don't need it because I don't need the external validation anymore. And that was really empowering for me. It was just like, oh, that's never going to work for me. And not being like, oh, but I want him to like me, or it's like, I didn't need that. And so I was so grateful for the time that I took for myself to heal those kinds of things before I would get, you know, just needing someone to make me feel better, like as if that's a thing.
Yes. Yes. You know? I do think that's an important distinction, is there needs to be some sort of unattachment from needing that, because it's so easy to get swept up. Like, it's so easy. I did that so many times of like, I'm not going to go on a date with someone with XYZ. And then it's like, I do. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I don't want this, but I'm here and I don't want to leave it now. So it's hard.
You have to learn how to be able to sit with yourself and be okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay, I would love to hear. So you're practicing.
Yes.
You were practicing, you were dating, and then I'd love to hear the story about how you met your husband, how it was different, how you knew.
So this is where my story always shocks people. So I'm practicing, I'm dating. I end up, you know, getting into a relationship with a very nice guy who, you know, I asked early on, like, what are your thoughts on long-term relationships? So that felt like a huge step of being like, oh, okay, I want a committed relationship. I'm going to give you a committed relationship. So we were together for 9 months, and 9 months in. So mind you, I have not seen my ex I think it had been a year and a half at that point. So we had not spoken, we had not seen each other. And I knew that around this time, one of our mutual friends was getting married. And so I was going to be seeing my ex for the first time at that wedding. And
how did you feel about that?
I actually felt okay. Like, I will say I had some butterfly type. There were nerves for sure. But my boyfriend couldn't couldn't go to the wedding. I went with a girlfriend and, you know, I made it a point to like go up and say hi to my ex pretty early into the wedding because I was like, I know I'm not going to be able to settle until I break the ice. So I went up with my friend. We said hi and it was fine. So we broke the ice. And then, you know, towards the end of the wedding, I ended up asking if he could talk. And I just basically said to him, because I do think people always ask, like, is there a point where it makes sense to like apologize to an ex to go to seek it out? And I don't think there is ever a good reason to do that. But I do think there are times where it does happen organically where you see them. And, you know, all I said was, you know, I appreciate the time we had together. I appreciate that you told me your truth, that you didn't want a long-term relationship. And I appreciate that you let me go, you know, and I said, like, I'm sorry for trying to turn you into something that you had very vocally said you didn't want to do. So we had like a really nice conversation and that was it. And then about 3 weeks after this wedding, I get an email from him, my ex, asking to get coffee. And that,
whoa.
Yeah. So that was shocking. Ooh.
That was what did that bring up for you?
You know, it's funny. It didn't bring up anything except a huge amount of curiosity of like what, and I said, you know, what, you know, I'm in a relationship. I would like to know your intentions for getting coffee because, and that too, like, oh my gosh, what maturity for me to be like, no, I'm not just going to hop up, like jump at this and immediately do this. It was like, what's your intention? I talked to my boyfriend. I said, I thought he was going to try to make amends to me, similar to what I had done at the wedding. And so, you know, I talked to my boyfriend. And so we ended up meeting for coffee and I will make a super long story short, but essentially at this coffee, he gave me a letter and then read the letter. And the letter said that since we had broken up, he had been single for the first time basically in his entire life, that he really wanted to figure out like what was blocking him from wanting a commitment. And he had gone to therapy and hiked and all of these things. And, you know, along those that way, he realized at some point that he wanted to have kids, like he really wanted to have that as part of his life. And then realized like, OK, that would mean I also want to get married. And he basically said, like, when I saw you at the wedding, I realized that it should have been with you, like that it should be with you. And this was so overwhelming. Mind you, we're at like a Starbucks.
Wow.
And my first instinct is I'm pissed. I'm pissed. Like, hey, dude, too little, too late. Like,
yeah.
What do you expect me to do with this information, you know? And so, you know, he basically said, like, I have changed. And if anything, like, if this doesn't work out with you, I want to thank you for making me see that this is something that I want. So, I left coffee and I said, I don't know if you will hear from me. And that's how I left it. And again, like, that's a very big progress too, to say like, thank you for this letter. And
wow,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how I feel. And it just so happened that I had a bachelorette party for a friend that weekend. And so I took like 4 days and really, I don't know, I did a lot of writing. I did a lot of talking to like my parents, my friends. And
how does your boyfriend take this?
Well, so that's, yeah. So I told him that we had coffee and he didn't really, and this, so this is like kind of what I'm getting to, is the first thing that I realized was like, okay, this relationship did give me security and commitment, but that was kind of it. You know, like, he was not a good boyfriend. I think we saw each other like once a week and we'd been together for like 9 months. So there was,
wow.
Yeah, so there was like a lot of, and he always like gave me a hard time for asking him to go to things. And he's like, I can't go, you know. So that was kind of the first thing I realized was like, oh, okay, I went the complete opposite direction. You know, it's like we have this pendulum in relationships, and Luke was, my ex was over here on one side and my other boy, you know, he was over here. So it was like, okay, neither of those, that didn't work. So the first thing I realized was like, okay, I don't think I can be with him. That was the first step that I had gotten to. And then, you know, the more I'm talking, the more that I'm working through this, I'm realizing like, he does sound very genuine in wanting to be together. And aside from the commitment thing, it was a really beautiful relationship that we had, and we were similar in so many ways and complemented each other in so many ways. And I remember my mom saying, like, I really liked him, you know, like, and I was happy that he let you go and it didn't get messy and we had no contact. So it never got too messy. So I guess the long story short of it is I called him. I had this whole list of stipulations that I needed him to do.
If you were going to take him back.
If I was going to take him back.
Uh-huh.
So I gave him this whole list of stipulations, and he proposed 6 months after that, and we've been married for almost 8 years now.
That's your husband?
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
I know. That's where that's always where the shock comes from. So yes, that is, we are married now. And I always hesitate to tell it because I don't want it to give people a false sense of hope on like, oh, they changed. Because I truly believe we are two very different people. Like our relationship now wouldn't work if we had never broken up. Because the person that I was when we were together before versus now is so wildly different. And we had to relearn each other in a lot of ways. Because all of a sudden he was like, oh, you have very strong opinions and you have boundaries. Like, this is new, you know, and it wasn't like a bad thing, but it was like, okay, we need to learn how to do this a little differently. So, yeah, that's it all comes full circle.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. It makes so much sense why you feel like, I don't like sharing this because then people are going to think, oh my, he's going to come back to me, which is like the opposite of the work that you're trying to do with people.
Yes.
But yes. What's so beautiful about it is, You did break up. You took time. You changed. Sounds like he did the same. And it makes me love. I love the mantra, the motto, like nothing that's meant for you will ever be gone if it's meant for you. So it's like, it feels like for you guys, timing, right?
Yes.
Was everything.
Timing was everything. And also like, I don't know, because now I'm forgetting that super cliche quote of right person, wrong time. Mm-hmm. I don't think I believe that quote just because at that time he was the wrong person, you know, and I was also the wrong person. Like I could not have continued to operate as that version in a long-term relationship. Like I would have just completely been resentful and burnt out and all of these things. So, I think the reason it worked was our breakup was not messy. It was very clean. It was like, okay, I can't do this. I'm going to let you go. And we did not see or speak to each other for a year and a half. And, you know, people will say like, how do you know people have changed? It's one of those things, like, I can't even really tell you exactly what it was, but it was so abundantly clear to me that when we got back together, he was all in, you know? And even my family commented on it. They were, and he, you know, he reached out to my dad and sat down with my dad and apologized for hurting his daughter. You know, he did so many of these things. And it was, you know, my dad even said, like, before it always felt like you were, had your toes dipped in. He's like, you're here now. And I can feel that. And we can feel that. I'm very close with my family. So
yeah, I was going to say your parents sound like they're really great people.
They are. Yes. They're really great people. Mm-hmm. And so he knew that, you know, and he knew that I would be talking to all of them before making the decision of getting back together. And yeah, so it was very abundantly clear that he was all in. And that he, you know, I mean, the proposal 6 months later helped too, obviously, but you know, it's, yeah, it was just, it was clear that it worked out. But I also firmly believe that if he hadn't come into the picture, that I would have found my person. Like, I never think that there's one person out there for everyone. And
I totally agree.
And I also know that, God forbid, anything happened in our relationship, like, I also know I'd be okay. I'm not, you know, I don't hang. And that's so much freedom. I think that's something that I've learned and try to tell people with breakups. Once you survive a breakup that really brings you to your knees, the freedom that you can operate in future relationships knowing that you will survive without any one person gives you such freedom to be yourself with people. And that's not something that I had before. And that is, I don't know. Like, I don't stress about my relationship anymore, which is, oh my God, that used to take up all my mental capacity.
Yeah. What you just said was so powerful and profound. Like, when you survive a breakup and you do the inner work, it's like, and I've been in my relationship that's so safe and beautiful for like over a year and a half now. And if at any point that something happens, right? Like, there's where I have to abandon myself or there's something that goes wrong. It's like, I thank you and I'm leaving. Like, I don't think a lot of people can say that about that. You know, they're like, I wouldn't know what I would do if, you know, we didn't work out. And it's like, I could never be in the place I am. And it is that feeling of freedom that I never had before back when I was in my marriage, you know? And it's like, yes, we want to be together. We're committed and all the things. And I'm going to be okay if something happens to where we're not going to be able to stay together.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's, I don't know, being on both sides of that, and I'm sure you can relate to, it's like, I don't know, it's so powerful to just knowing how much I used to shrink and self-abandon in relationships to knowing it's like, if I don't appreciate something, I can bring it up. It's like, oh my, the amount of time it would take for me to bring something up in past relationships was crazy. Like, I'd have to write about it and then call like three people to be like, is this okay if I'm mad about this? You know, and now it's like, that's just not how my life is anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so tell me, how is your life now? Like, what, so you I want to hear about your kids and also maybe a little bit about how you make work-life balance, being a mom, being a wife, being all the things.
Life is so insane. So we had our son, Ryan, 4.5 years ago, and then we went for baby number two and got the 2-for-1 special. We had twin boys a little over 2 years ago. And
yeah,
so
that was you. I feel like you were pregnant when I did my interview with you.
Very well could have been. Yes. Very
so
well.
So you have three
been.
Boys?
I have three boys, 4.5 and under. Yeah. So it's wild. It's very chaotic. And, you know, we're so lucky that we have help and we have prioritized having help in our family. So, you know, I do have the time to record record my podcast, which I've kept going, and I've had to let go of certain elements of like not doing coaching anymore and that, but I've been able to say like, okay, what do I really enjoy doing? And I love talking to people on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to, you know, prioritize that. And yeah, it's, you know, life is very, it's very busy, but it's been like this new, I don't know. Like I said in the beginning, the tools that I have learned have just helped me in so many ways, even in motherhood of, you know, being able to like set boundaries and put myself first sometimes and not all the time. But even, you know, I was talking to my parents last night at dinner. It was my mom's birthday yesterday. And we were just I was talking about how nice it is to feel secure in a relationship when life is so chaotic. Cause it's like at this point, you know, my husband and I are both just like, all right, we're just gonna survive the day. That's all we're gonna do. It's like there's no stress of trying, you know, and we're trying to get a little bit better about making time for each other. But, you know, the first 2 years of having three kids, 2.5 and under was insane. And
you kept the podcast going during that time?
I did a lot of pre-planning, you know, so I batched a lot of stuff and I've learned how to work through that and plan ahead. So I'm not super stressed about it, but yes, we've kept it up. And yeah, so I think we're kind of turning the corner of like being out of the crazy, super in the trenches, like sleeping through the night and things, but it's fun. It's fun. And it's so interesting to look at like the dichotomy of life. Like even that, you know, I'm lucky enough to work with an agency now for the podcast. And it's so funny because it's like, oh, would you want to do ads for this brand? And I'm like, I would love to. But like my listeners are just not in that space. So being able to kind of navigate both of like my kids aren't going to want, I mean, my listeners aren't going to want to hear about like a kid's vitamin company because they're struggling with the fact that they just lost a relationship. So being able to, you know, kind of keep both of those things in mind is cool. And it helps me. I feel like it helps me use different parts of my brain.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I love that. Think before we hop off, I've loved this conversation, by the way. I just feel like there's so much alignment between us and the things that we teach and some similar things we've been through. I love you bring up self-abandonment so much. And that is like the core of my work, is bringing awareness to what it is and how to stop doing it. And so can you, I think this is something that's really important to you too. I would love for you to just speak on when you learned about that, how you helped people through that, just anything you could give the listeners.
Yeah. I think the best way I can describe how I learned about it was I had a therapist that I was working with, and I don't even remember what the situation was, but she said, you know, if you ignore your inner compass long enough, you'll lose your true north. And I think about that all the time. Like I quote that all the time, because I do think that's exactly what it is the, you know, I think the way that I can help other people with it, and it's kind of hard. It's one of those things where I do think you kind of have to try it, of like realizing that it feels icky to give your power to someone else. Just shift, like figuring out like what are the blocks, what's blocking you from not wanting to be yourself and speak your mind. And one of the things is like letting go of that people-pleasing element of thinking that I just wanted to get, you know, I thought it was helping other people to be easy breezy, whatever you want, I'm in for. And realizing that doesn't help anyone. And like my true intimate relationships, whether that's friends in my marriage, those all come from truth. And being able to know that they'll tell me the truth, I will tell them the truth. And so it's not helping anyone. And I think my world outside kind of had to crumble a little bit with friends and relationships and being like, okay, this was all not real. Like that wasn't even me. And it's like, I'd so much rather build this up. And I will say, like, there's a kind of lonely in between of when you're trying to learn. I remember I had a mentor tell me, like, it's like a cocoon phase where you're figuring it all out. And it was hard. It was painful. But once coming out of that, it's and knowing what it feels like to really make a friend that knows you, that's so cool. And like, I don't know. I think some of it is like, what do you have to lose in trying it?
Right. And you're right, though. It is when you've abandoned yourself basically your whole life and then you stop doing it, that's when you have the friendship deaths and you lose the people that you were not yourself for. And when you really go back to it, it's like, it's actually not their fault.
Yeah.
You were not being authentic with who you are. Right. Yeah. And so it's like this grief of like losing the people that knew that version of you. And then it takes a little bit of time to practice that. And then it's like, oh my gosh, the people that want your authenticity, then those friendships, relationships start coming into your life. And that's where you can actually trust, because you are operating from truth now.
Yeah. Yes. You know? So I think some of it is just like paying attention to the pain points of that, of like, oh, that felt icky to say yes when I meant no. Or I, you know, for me, it was like, I'm such a stickler with commitments. So realizing, okay, I committed to this, I don't want to go. It feels so horrible to have to cancel something. So it was like, okay, what if I just didn't say yes in the first place? What would that look, you know, what would that look like? And trying that and being like, that's way easier than having to go to something I don't want to or having to cancel. So just kind of figuring out like where it works for you and trying things on. It's a lot of just practice.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you so much. Do you want to share like where people can find you? I'll link you too. Yeah. But like,
yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This was a really fun. I don't get to tell my story very often, so it feels nice to
reflect. It's such an honor to hear your story and,
thank you.
And everything you've been through and what you've built and the way you're helping people. Like, it's just so in alignment with what I do too. And we need to be besties.
I know. I feel like I get to meet so many incredible people through this. And I'm always like, oh, in another life, maybe when kids are older, it's like we can actually go have lunch together. But the best place to find me is on Instagram at your breakup bestie. And then my website is breakupbestie.com. My podcast is called Heal Your Heartbreak. It is anywhere you can listen to podcasts. And I think we have 320 episodes. So plenty to binge through if you are really needing support. And then I also have some online courses on my website too. So plenty amazing. Of resources.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing your story and for being here with me today. I really loved our conversation.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Okay. I just love her. Kendra, thank you so much for being here. This conversation was everything I hoped it would be and more. And if you're listening and something hit you today, whether it was something about the pain you've been carrying or the ways you've been abandoning yourself in relationships, or just a reminder that healing is supposed to feel like something, I want you to sit with that. That feeling is information. What Kendra and I kept coming back to today is something I talk about all the time in my work. You can't heal what you won't feel. And a breakup, as brutal as it is, it can be one of the most powerful invitations to finally stop abandoning yourself and start coming home to who you actually are. So go check out Kendra. She's at Your Breakup Bestie on Instagram. Her podcast is Heal Your Heartbreak. And her book, The Breakup Workbook, is a real resource if you're in it right now. And I'll link everything in the show notes. And if this episode resonated with you, I would love for you to share it with a friend who needs it. You never know. And I'll be back. I'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much for being here. And if you have time, if you can rate the podcast, that would mean everything to me. And as always, I'd love to connect with you. Come find me on Instagram at Shift with Beth. Okay, see you guys next week.